From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of March 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And then a bit later on the program, we'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Drew Lerner will have an update of the weather forecast as we make our way through the end of the program. Mike Tenora is off this week and next week and the following week, though it's just a two-week vacation for him. So Drew will be here on those three Thursdays. We thank him for filling in for that process right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up at the CME Group in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. March wheat at $6.79, down 23 and 3 quarters. July at $6.78, down 10 and a quarter cents. Hard red July at $7.31 and a half, 10 and 1/2 cents lower. March corn at $4.84 and a quarter, unchanged. The May at $4.85, 3 and a half cents lower. And July futures down 3 at $4.89. December contract, $4.84, 2 and a quarter lower, and the March of next year at $4.91 and a quarter, down a penny and 3 quarters. March soybean futures, $13.90 and 3 quarters, up 9 cents. May at $13.96 and a quarter, that a gainer as well, up 9 and a quarter. July at $13.78, up 9 and a half cents. November beans at $11.79 and 3 quarters, up 3 and a half, and January of next year at $11.83 and a half, up 4 and a half cents. Bean meal at $4.49.60, up $1.30. Bean oil at $42.77. That's finished down 53 cents on the day. Live cattle futures from the CME Group in the April at $143.62 and a half, 25 cents lower. June 20 higher at $136.87 and a half. March feeders unchanged at $173.97 and a half. And the April contract at $175.92 and a half for 100 pounds. A nickel higher for the feeder cattle in the April contract. Lean futures, April, $118.92 and a half, up to $3 limit. May futures at $123.20, up $2.05. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It does come to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can find us online on demand anytime you'd like to hear us at willag.org. The address, again, WILLAG.org. We come to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, April contract, $98.22 a barrel, up 23 cents. The RBOB gasoline, that's the wholesale price, at $2.93, 2.5 cents lower a gallon. Ethanol futures at $2.45 and 6 tenths, up 8.5 cents for the day. And the difference between the two, or the spread now, 47 and 4 tenths of a cent wide. That's beginning to narrow up sharply, and it is 11 cents narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $4.38 and 3 tenths. That's a dime and 7 tenths of a cent lower. And diesel fuel at $2.91 and 9 tenths, down just 6 tenths of a cent on the day. Gold futures up $1.90 at $1,372.40 an ounce, and the U.S. dollar at 79.62. is up 0.01 at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We'll see sunny skies and a high of 44 degrees, though it's certainly not getting there just yet. Temperature outside our studios just 35, mostly clear this evening, and a low of 35 degrees on a south wind at 11 to 13 miles an hour. And then tomorrow on Friday, sunny skies and 58. It'll be breezy, a south-southwest wind at 15 to 21 miles an hour. Friday evening, mostly clear and 32. Saturday, sunny skies and 53. Calm winds at 5 to 7 miles an hour in the morning. Mostly cloudy Saturday evening, a low of 27. And on Sunday, partly sunny skies and 34 degrees. Partly cloudy on Sunday evening, a low of 19. Monday, sunny and 38, and Monday night, mostly cloudy and 28. Tuesday, sunny skies, 48 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 33. And on Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny and a high near 50 degrees. We'll have more on the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Services. He is in Kansas City. That'll come up at the bottom of the half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. It is the 13th day of March. On the phone line with us to take us through the marketplace this afternoon, Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan. I have been out of the marketplace for a couple of days, and I'm wondering just exactly what's been happening and how the markets might continue to react. Can you give me any indications, please?
This week has been the explosion in the wheat market. The wheat market showed a pretty good surge here in the first half of the week. Now, today we did give back 10 cents or so of that, which is probably somewhat in line with the correctional decline. The only worry, though, it did come at the expense of a reversal down because we did make higher highs in the overnight session. So we did get what we would call as a reversal down. Now, the thing that we have been experiencing a lot of reversal ups and reversal down in all three commodities basically over the past month or two. For the most part, they haven't really had much traction. They would show follow through maybe for a day or two, and then the brakes was put on. So we'll have to see whether or not the reversal down in wheat is something more meaningful, or if it was just part of people wanting to take profits after a good surge up in the market this week. I'm more inclined to think it's a lot of it is profit taking. The market as a whole has been very choppy. Of course, you know, soybeans had a hard down yesterday. They gap lower down. Now today they had a reasonable day to the upside, but they didn't finish up toward their highs because they sold off in the last 15 minutes with wheat and corn. So tomorrow will be important, but the market is you know, several fronts is confusing. The Ukraine situation, you know, one wire story will say that Russian troops are building up along the Ukraine border, and then you'll hear another wire story saying that they think things are going to work out and supplies out of the Ukraine is going to run smoothly. So that's jerking things around. Worries about that March 31st report, because last March report was terribly bearish, so that brings back a lot of memories that the March report could totally kill a market. And then, you know, nobody's going to go to the field up north anytime soon. It looks like April is the earliest we're going to get to the field. So we're starting to maybe worry a little bit about spring planting, but nothing to any great extent.
When you look at this soybeans and the March and the November contracts, because the March, of course, has the gap in it. The November does not. And if you go back over time and think about the way things have changed as the South American bean crop has come in, usually there's a point at which we switch over to the new crop contracts as the lead in the marketplace. That happens a little later, I think, now than it used to, because of the crop that's coming out of South America's old crop stays maybe in the driver's seat. But can you help me understand which one of those contracts is more important at this point and when the switch usually takes place?
Oh, Mike, you still have to stay with the front end. We're still in March. If the trade moves to November, that's going to be more in the July time frame. The front end months, I mean, the even though a lot of the China sales in today's report was in the new crop, we still have an oversale in the old crop. So the market is bracing, I think, for some sales cancellations because at some point in time we're going to have to, unless USDA finds 60, 70 million bushels like they did last year, then that would ease some concerns. But no, I think old crop is still where the action's at least over the next 60 days. And, of course, the March report will have a lot to say with it. If USDA can't find any additional beans, and maybe they even lose some beans, I think that would be very explosive to the old crop contracts for one more surge to the upside to try to get the sales cancellations going. And once they get them going, then they'll unwind that bull spread. But the thing that we got to keep in mind here as we go toward the end of March, we're not only going into a big government report, we are going into an end of the quarter, end of the month, and since there's so much of this open interest is fund-related, index fund or traditional fund-related, you have to, a lot of times the market gets real choppy and skittish because what we're seeing is profit-taking for those quarterly reports. So I think that has a lot to do with some of this choppiness we're seeing in the marketplace. It's just coming a little earlier because this March report is so important to the overall direction of the market during April, May, and June.
If the funds are the buyers, who have been the sellers?
Well, commercials and South Americans. South Americans have been the sellers, probably more so in the wheat market. Commercials are short, basically from buying soybeans from the U.S. farmer, but they're probably the shorts in the market. Funds are long. Corn market, now that's same thing. Commercials, remember when commercials buy corn from the farmer, they have to hedge it, so the elevators probably hold the hedges. Your processing companies may have a little different type of positions, but in the same way with your exporters may carry a little different position, but they're mostly hedged up and working the margins is what the commercial grain trade does.
So let me ask you this one. So in the corn market, we understand that those are hedges for the commercials because they've been buying corn, but they're simply taking a position in the soybean market, is that right?
Well, the only people that would take the elevator, by law, technically should be hedged.
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
now,
you're right.
But now when you get into end users, such as big feedlots or big processing companies or whatnot, they're users of grain, and they have to have so many bushels coming into the market each day for that feedlot, for that processor, for that ethanol plant. Now, those guys could very well have some longs in place. I wouldn't necessarily say that wouldn't be the case because they're users of grain, so they're they got to make sure that they've got supplies coming in to keep in their plants and their feedlots and everything working. So that could be a little they could be long some. But your exporters are basically going to be a hedge type position. They're maybe short a boatload of beans and maybe don't have the cash inventory at hand, but they may be short several boatloads of corn or soybeans for summer delivery. They don't have the actual possession of the cash inventory yet. They're waiting on the farmer maybe to let loose of some cash inventory as we go down the road. Probably when the snow melts up north, we're going to get some cash movement at some point in time. May have to wait till June, but we know that cash movement is going to come to town. So that's what's expected to fill a lot of these orders in the export market this summer. The exporters are basically short summer months. They probably don't have the cash inventory, but they're waiting on the farmer to sell them the inventory.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon. Just want to give you a couple of notes about our bus trip to John Deere. We left on Monday afternoon on our Follow the Corn bus trip. At 16 or 17 of us on board throughout the trip. It was a great trip. Saw the combines and the planters being made along with the tractors, and spent a neat mealtime there at the headquarters. Honestly, they treated us really well at the headquarters. We got the gold key treatment. It was a great meal. The planter tour was fantastic. We spent a couple hours there. If you go and try to take a look at these places, I think you ought to, whether you go with us or someplace else. Just go on your own. You can make a trip up to see the John Deere plants. The planter folks were working their tails off, and they were just humping in that planter plant, trying to get a whole bunch of planters built. And they gave us a little tour of that brand new ExactEmerge. They brought a unit out and took us through it. We got to handle it a bit. It's something else. I really appreciate all the folks that managed to go along with us. It was a great tour, and we'll put together another bus trip soon enough, and hopefully you'll decide you ought to go on that trip with us. It's our Follow the Corn bus tour. I try to put some more photos up on the website in a different way so that you can take a look at them and explain what we did. You can find that all at willag.org, pretty shortly, willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in just a moment. He'll take us through the weather, rather the agricultural news for the afternoon. Remember, you can find us online at willag.org. At willag.org.
In agricultural news, a new report from the Office of the Inspector General says that USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service is not doing enough to protect the data it releases through the lockup process it uses to prepare and release data. Reports prepared under lockup include the department's monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report and its monthly Crop Production report. OIG says NAS needs to improve the security of its sensitive commodity market data and other information technology resources. The report notes that someone was able to bring a cell phone into lockup, even though such devices are banned from the secured area. A proposed change to California's low carbon fuel standard rules would mean a reduction in the carbon penalty for corn-based ethanol. The change will make biofuels, such as corn-based ethanol primarily produced outside of California, and soy-based biodiesel eligible as a low-carbon fuel in the state. The proposed changes in the carbon penalty are based on recent studies showing less carbon intensity from the production of biofuels. A group of the world's most developed countries says it's provisionally halting accession talks with Russia. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says it has postponed activities related to Russia joining the OECD for the time being. Russia has been in talks to join since May of 2007. The move is rare for the 34-member Club of Nations, which traditionally strives to maintain an impartial stance. The OECD did not directly mention the current conflict between Russia and Ukraine, but it also said in its statement that its members agreed to strengthen cooperation with Ukraine at the country's request. Allendale's annual farmer survey today says that farmers expect to plant 92.349 million acres of corn, which would be the fourth largest since 1944, when 94.473 million acres were planted. Using Allendale's 163 bushel to the acre trend, it would produce a corn crop of 13.781 billion bushels. That would be the second largest in U.S. history. Meanwhile, for soybeans, farmers expect to plant 83.212 million acres using Allendale's estimate of harvest acreage of 44.29 bushels to the acre. It would imply production of 3.639 billion bushels, which would be a record. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The 25th annual All-Day Ag Outlook Day was a huge success. We want to thank everyone who attended, and we want to thank our participating businesses for their support. Pioneer Seed, Risk Management Commodities, Standard Grain, Stuart Peterson, and Farm Credit, Illinois.
This is the closing market report for Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett of TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, is now on the phone line with us. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Todd?
I'm doing very well. What do the folks in your area think about the break in the market?
Well, I think most guys are kind of looking at this right now as maybe it's just a little bit volatile here, and they're worried, you know, about maybe some topping action in here. And so we're seeing several guys that are saying, you know, we've had a couple chances at 460 corn and for cash, and they're moving more bushels all the time. And I think guys have been pretty good about letting go of some bushels.
Are you at that 460 level still?
Well, yeah, my bid right now currently is 460. You know, we're around 25 under right now, which is, you know, we've slid about a nickel in the last 2 weeks. But, you know, you got to remember there's a lot of grain that's been delivered with the weather getting better. And most elevators, as far as out here in the country, are still, you know, doing everything they can just to get a little bit of room for guys to haul corn in. So out here, the thing's pretty much full.
Yeah, I guess so. Have they complained about the 25 under? Because it's been a long time since they've seen that big a number.
Well, there's a few guys that maybe haven't been necessarily happy about it, but on the other hand, I think they understand that they've also had a chance to get this huge rally.
Right.
And anytime you get this big of a rally, I think they're understanding that they're in a situation that they're going to probably lose some bases.
And what do you think about soybeans?
Well, I think with the bean market, you know, I haven't been bullish beans for a long time, and I can, you know, and I'm still in the same boat. I think we've obviously seen them get hit a little bit here this week, and I don't find that as a surprise in any way, shape, or form, considering how overbought we've been in this bean market for so long. And you know, we do know that South American beans are a little bit cheaper than what ours are. I know they've got a lot of logistical issues, but bottom line is, you know, moving forward, we probably won't export as many beans as what we've been exporting. That's the way it usually goes.
About halfway through the month of March, not quite that far just yet, but we'll get to those end of the month acreage reports and grain stocks numbers pretty quickly. Got some ideas about the acreage and what?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. You know, I think this thing's kind of moved back and forth. Obviously, we've seen big rallies really for both markets, both corn and beans, and I think, you know, we're still looking at that, 2.45 or so to one. And so in that situation, I think that beans are probably going to win out in a lot of areas, especially given the, you know, just the economic climate on the farm. I think a lot of guys are in the situation where they might want to have a little bit more beans in their rotation, especially as good as what maybe they've yielded here these last couple of years. So I'm going to be looking at, you know, still like a 93.5 maybe on corn, and on beans, I'm going to say 80 plus for the first time ever. I don't know exactly where, but I'm going to go 80, 80.5.
Will most of those come on the fringe areas, the extra bean acres, or will we see much of a switch in the primaries?
Well, I think you're going to see some switch in the primary areas, but I do think the fringe areas, you're definitely going to see a decent amount of switch. And I think, you know, getting this huge rally in the bean market to where you can get, you know, fall beans back up to that 1150 level, it's been something the guys are considering.
And your bids?
Yeah, cash corn 460, fall 454, cash beans 1373, fall 1143.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, back in a couple of minutes with today's ag weather forecast.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Coconut Torte Day. The torte originated in Linz, Austria, and the recipe dates back to at least 1653. It was Johann Vogel, born in 1796, who eventually began to mass-produce torques around the world. On this day in agricultural history in 1813, Lorenzo De Monaco was born in Switzerland, a famed restaurateur. In 1851, he joined his uncles in their catering and pastry shop in New York City. He transformed the business into one of the most famous restaurants in the country. De Monaco's was one of the first continuously run restaurants in the U.S. It was the first in the nation with a separate wine list, and famous patrons included Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, Oscar Wilde, and J.P. Morgan. In 1915, Wilbert Robinson, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, attempted to catch a baseball dropped from an airplane, but someone had substituted a grapefruit instead, which virtually exploded in his glove on impact, covering him with grapefruit pulp and juice. And in 2006, Robert C. Baker died at the age of 84. While a poultry and food professor at Cornell University from 1949 to 1989, he developed chicken nuggets, turkey ham, poultry hot dogs, and many other products. He founded Cornell's Institute of Food Science and Marketing in 1970, and in 2004 was inducted into the American Poultry Hall of Fame. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Now here's Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City with today's agricultural weather forecast.
Weather conditions across the Midwest are going to improve today after the big storm system that impacted the region in the last 2 days. Yesterday, we saw additional snow occur across Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio and became a significant storm in the northeastern part of the country. Now, the moisture totals associated with that yesterday ranged upwards to a quarter of an inch, with some local amounts getting into the range of 0.4 to 0.9 inches from eastern Ohio into parts of Pennsylvania. The forecast is for drier weather across the Midwest now for a while. The forecast is for the temperatures to rebound across parts of the region over these next couple of days. Temperatures this afternoon, though, will still be fairly chilly across the region. We expect to see highs running mostly in the 30s across the Great Lakes region. 40s and 50s will occur further to the south, but most of the warmth will be in the southwestern half of the Corn Belt. In those areas will see temperatures this afternoon getting into the 50s and 60s. And out there in hard red winter wheat country, there may be a few lower 70-degree readings as well. Tomorrow, we'll see the temperatures continuing to improve across the lower eastern Midwest, with temperatures getting back into the 50s and 60s. Even the northern parts of the Midwest will see some 40-degree highs. But a reinforcing shot of colder air will be coming southward from Canada as we move forward into the weekend, and that will drop temperatures again across many areas. The coolest temperatures will be on Sunday, and at that time we'll look for highs running in the 20s and 30s across a big part of the Midwest, with some 40s expected in the southernmost areas near the Ohio River Valley. We'll again start to warm back up again as we move into the early to middle part of next week. Our lowest temperatures at night will probably bottom out on Saturday and Sunday mornings, when we'll see some near 0-degree readings again across the northernmost fringes of the Midwest from Minnesota into parts of upper Michigan. Most other temperatures will bottom out in the teens and 20s across a big part of the Midwest, with a couple of single-digit readings possible. But temperatures before and after that period will be running mostly teens and 20s for lows, with some 30s expected in the south. We don't have much in the way of significant storminess on the chart for the Midwest for a while now, but we will continue to focus our eyes onto the period from the 20th through the 23rd of March. During that period of time, a large storm system is expected to brew in the middle of the country, and it could bring substantial rains back across the lower and eastern portions of the Midwest, with snow likely in the upper portions of the region. Even portions of hard red winter wheat country will get precipitation out of the event, but the southwest plains, where it's been so dry for the past 4 years, may still miss out on significant precipitation. The storm system is still too far out in the forecast period for us to have much confidence in it, and to be honest with you, the computer forecast model runs in the past couple of days have been all over the board as far as exactly how much precipitation will occur and where, so we'll continue to watch for the system very cautiously. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Our thanks go to Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City for his update of the agricultural weather forecast here on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. That wraps it up. You have a great afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
The 25th annual All-Day Ag Outlook Day was a huge success. We want to thank everyone who attended, and we want to thank our participating businesses for their support. Pioneer Seed, Risk Management Commodities, Standard Grain, Stuart Peterson, and Farm Credit, Illinois.